while we're recording in two different places.
Okay, we're gonna call the meeting to order. For the record, let it show that all board members are present. Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the pledge?
I'd be honored. If you'd like to follow after me, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you. To all of our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you'll be muted for a majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star six on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting, and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you very much. Announcement of action taken in closed session. There was no action to announce. Comments from board members. We have Trustee Davis. Would you like to make any comments?
Well, thank you for all the hard work that the district has put together for the distance learning. I certainly hope the teachers are as prepared as they can be, and I certainly hope the students and the families understand that everything's been done to accommodate their needs. And I just hope that as time goes on, this gets better for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Boone.
Yeah, first of all, I'd just like to apologize. I can't be on Zoom. I don't have internet access where I live. I have an employee that came down sick and was tested for COVID on Monday. So obviously I can't come into the DO at this time. But I've been fielding some calls from parents as late as even today, and they're getting in contact. I've had them get in contact with their schools, but there still seems to be some confusion about the internet stuff. And I was just wondering if we couldn't send out, apparently they've missed their email or one of the correspondences about the hotspots and different things that have been offered by the district. So I don't know if we can send something out to the Foothill kids again. Maybe part of it is their lack of having internet or, you know, service up in the Foothills. But I had four calls just today of students, you know, not knowing what was expected of them and what to do. And, you know, I made them aware, had them call their school sites, and they got good answers. And the answers are out there, but they're just not quite getting all the communications. So that's all I'd like to say. And, you know, thanks for all the hard work. And I think you guys have done a pretty darn good job of, you know, doing everything you can to accommodate these students. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Allison.
Yeah, I'm here on my phone. I've got my computer in front of me, and I just don't have the connection to be able to do Zoom. So I really want to thank you guys for all the work that you guys are doing. And I think you're doing a great job. So that's it.
Thank you. Trustee Fleury.
Yes, I would like to thank the district for the hard work and the union members, MUTA, that worked with them all summer to reach an agreement. It's great that they're working together and they're working for the best of our students. Secondly, I would like to recognize a couple of longtime employees that are retiring. Last year, we put something in that we would honor them in front of the board, and now it's impossible, of course, because of the COVID. So the employees that I would like to mention and honor for their hard work. The first one is Lynette Abbott, who has 33 years in the business department, and she was very, very capable of doing her job, and she was always very helpful to the public. The second one is Nancy Brewer, who retired at the first of the year at McKinney Intermediate, where she spent most of her time She had 30 years. And then we have a teacher, Kathleen Duncan. I do not know how many years she worked, but I know she was at Marysville High for many years. And a district becomes great for people that support us and those that work together. And these are great employees. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Scott.
Yes, I would like to also say thank you to our technology department and for all those that help make this possible so that we can still have the communication that we have. And I'd also like to welcome back to the teachers and to the staff to a new, I'd like to say exciting, but I don't know if that's a good word to use right now, but I'd just like to say welcome back. And this is a moment in our history of being the first to actually start a distant learning school year. And I say thank you for the teachers, for their effort and for their professionalism while they're trying to give the best to our students. I know that we're all looking forward to returning back to a norm. And whenever that'll be, I'm so glad. I think that we'll all be very excited about it. And thank you, parents, for your trust that you have in us and our school district and our board of trustees to try to put forth the best efforts possible for your students, for your children. And I'm wishing you all well and hoping for the best, and be safe.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford.
Yes, I'd just like to express my gratitude to all my teacher friends out there. I'm nearing close to 50 years now in education, and I always looked with trepidation and excitement at the beginning of school. I can't imagine what you folks are going through now. I honestly believe I would be a nervous wreck, and I don't blame you if you are too. And to all our classified, our bus drivers, our cooks, and everyone out there, things are going to get better, and I wish you all the best, and we're going to have a great start to the school year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rother. I want to thank all of our essential workers that are employed by MJUSD. In my eyes, every one of our employees is an essential worker. The district cannot provide a safe and quality education without each and every one of you. The teachers that are preparing to deliver the curriculum to our students. The nutritional service workers that are preparing to feed our students. The site administrators that are preparing for school to start. All of the site secretaries that have been greeting parents and answering questions. The custodial staff that are preparing our sites to be safe. All of our paraeducators that are preparing for student support. All district office staff and administrators that have been working all summer to make sure our district is operating smoothly. Our directors that have worked tirelessly on the district's reopening plan, along with their duties within their own departments. The maintenance and ground workers getting our sites ready for school. The superintendent and the assistant superintendent for all their work on all aspects of running our district. Our transportation department that will help distribute food to students while on distance learning, and transporting students when the time comes. The informational technology department is going above and beyond during these times. Our nurses that are preparing to help our students. All of our psychologists that are preparing to start the school year. All of our student support services employees that are getting ready to help our students. The district warehouse employees that deliver supplies throughout the district. All of the coaches and the athletic trainers are preparing for the season when it gets here. Thank you to every one of these essential workers for your dedication and sacrifices that you have made to support the students and families of MJUSD. Many of you have similar family situations of your own. For example, child care concerns, compromised immune systems, caring for elderly family members, concerns about contracting COVID-19. My point to this is, again, to thank all of the MJUSD essential workers and to point out that no matter what your role is in our district, you are valued and appreciated. Without your services, the district cannot provide a quality education to our students. We are all in this together. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening. Most of you already know, not a secret, that I'm a Notre Dame fan. And considering what's going on with college football and with Notre Dame right now, you will not be shocked that I'm going to start off with a Notre Dame quote, yes, yet again. Lou Holtz, amazing former coach, once stated that adversity is another way to measure the greatness of individuals. I don't know that he had a pandemic in mind when he made the comment, but it seems extraordinarily fitting to exactly what we've been going through and what we are probably going to encounter as this year gets underway. First and foremost, I want to acknowledge and thank all of the amazing, dedicated, resilient, creative, and adaptable educators who are diligently and nervously working away in their classrooms, either on campus or at home, getting ready for the first day of school and for the coming days. I have always held teachers in general and Marysville Joint Unified teachers in particular in high regard. And I never knew that I could hold them in even higher regard. But after the last 6 months, and after this past summer, and after the past couple of weeks, I cannot even fathom nor find the words to describe how I truly feel about these remarkable professionals. I believe author and entrepreneur Guy Kawasaki was right when he said, if you have to put someone on a pedestal, put teachers, for they are society's heroes. I also want to thank Brian Williams and the tremendously talented tech department, working short even, which is unimaginable at this point in time. Thanks really doesn't seem like enough for you and your amazing people that work in your department, but I hope you do know that we are beyond grateful and appreciative for all of your hard work, your tireless efforts, and the critical time that you have all put in. Also, in short, I just want to ask that the district and the school board would do all of us, but in particular, Muta, a big favor and agree to the proposal that we have put forward on health and safety. We all know there are just two minor points that are also critical points to getting us through on that and getting us over the hump for that agreement as we continue on with bargaining on some issues that are still going to impact us this year. And also, since I know we've got a full agenda and we are all trying to get ready for tomorrow, I just want to keep things relatively short and wish all of us, educators, students, parents, all of the personnel for our school sites and for our entire district and our tech department, a very successful first day to the school year and the unprecedented start that we're about to have. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association, Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
I would like to just briefly thank the 22 union selected teachers and then Amy Stratton for working tirelessly over the summer to bring together 3 years worth of work on our report cards to create a new unified report card for the elementary schools. And then also we would like to thank Adriana Espinoza for her tireless work this week in getting all of that translated into Spanish so that it is all ready for this new school year. So all of these amazing efforts going on behind everything else. So we just wanted to thank everybody for the time that they put into that and have a great year, everyone.
Thank you, Dr. Bravo. Supervisory unit. Public comments. For teleconference meetings, please submit your public comment card located on the district webpage at www.njusc.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting, give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. Public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We do have a public comment card. Gabriella Pimentel, are you there? Gabriella Pimentel. Okay. Moving along. Next, we have the superintendent's report. Ms. Christina?
Together, serving every student, every day, in every way. Even before June 5th, a question we've all been asking is how will we reopen school in the fall? And June 5th till now, it's been 68 days. And this has been an odyssey for all stakeholders. And I'd like to join people tonight and thank so many stakeholders, teachers, for working throughout the summer, since, and particularly the beginning of August. And this week, the training and the energy and the commitment has been inspiring. Commuter leadership for all the time over the summer, basically giving up their summer to work toward this goal. Site administrators and directors for all summer, over 30 hours of Zoom meetings in July and August, with information coming in that's evolving, changing, evolving, and adjusting to that, and staying focused and dedicated to trying to get ICE open tomorrow as smoothly as possible. Parents, for braving the anxiety and the uncertainty, and for contributing hundreds of comments on our earlier plan that helps us to guide what our approaches are, what we try to do to best serve students and families. And all the support staff for all the planning, the organizing, and preparing for this new year. All hands on deck, people coming together for one common purpose. And for students for suffering the hardships of lots of opportunities and activities and being so cooperative and so positive amid adversity. And so I want to thank all stakeholders in this pursuit and wish everyone a very successful first day of school and a great opening of school. It's going to be we're going to wobble out of the blocks, but we work together and we stick together and we stay true north. We're going to serve very, very well. In preparation for the new school year, tonight, Ms. Penny Lossing will present the 45-day budget revision so we can see how the current economic situation will impact student learning this year and years to come. And staff will also present the revised proposed 2020-21 Marysville Joint Unified School District School Reopening Plan, as this ever-evolving working document will provide guidance on our collective path to slow the spread of COVID-19, to ensure the health and safety of our students and our staff, to help us maintain relationships and help us facilitate learning together, serving every student, every day, in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 7/21/20. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
A motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bone.
Stain.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yeah.
Trustee Crowder.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that a board member would like to have pulled? I would like to pull categorical programs on page 5, number 1. Page 5, categorical programs. The MOU with the California Home Building Foundation, CHF, for Lindhurst High School. Are there any other items board members would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve with the exception of the said item number 5, Mr. President.
Okay, motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second
by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. So going back to page 5, categorical programs, the MOU of the California Home Building Foundation, CHF, for Lindhurst High School. You know, reading through this is a program that I never heard about before, and it seemed like a tremendous program, and they just thought it would be very valuable for having more explanation of this program to our public. So I think we have Ms. Larson.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Rasmussen, for providing this opportunity for us to share a little bit more about this exciting partnership with the California Home Building Foundation. It is really neat to launch a brand new CTE program that already has all of the components in place to meet the elements of a high-quality CTE program, especially the links with business. That is a tough thing to do for a brand new program. So I'm just thrilled that we are able to start a program with this really solid foundation. But Bob Eckert, principal of Lyndhurst, and Jim Walls, the new construction technology teacher, really have been the two that have championed this project and this partnership. So I'm going to turn it over to Bob, who will be able to talk just a bit more about the program and certainly address any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Eckert.
Good evening, everybody. Like Jamie was saying, this program, we had never heard about it either. We had the opportunity to hire someone for our wood class, our construction technology class, straight from industry. He's had 30 some odd years within industry and wanted to get into the classroom and give back. Through collaboration and reaching out to other high schools, he came across this particular academy. It's BITI, Business, Industry, and Technology Academy. It's a not-for-profit organization. And their sole purpose for existence is to work with community youth to build skills and training so that the construction industry has a viable workforce when they're coming straight out, either to continue the trades to a journeyman level or whatever they choose to do. This program itself, it's active in 39 high schools, so in Northern California primarily. So we're probably going to be number 40. So there's not a lot out there. They are based out of Sacramento, which is also very, very nice. From a technical standpoint, on the school end of it, their courses 1 through 3 are actually ACG aligned. So in addition to industry standards and things that they're getting there, it's also aligned with A through G, which does also help out with our college and career ready. The sole purpose one of the main purposes of this academy is to build partnerships with the students directly with industry. They work with local builders such as Lennox, LGI, things of that nature, and that provides them an opportunity to get internships and externships for our instructor as well as for the kids. And it's kind of a give back situation. What they're hoping, and within this reciprocity, we train the students through the help of BTA, and what the workforce is getting or what the company is getting is, they're getting ready to go product kits to get into the workforce. And so to back it up a little bit, what they do is they provide, industry guest speakers, construction workers come in, project managers come in, engineers come in, and we have these guest speakers that are on a rotation coming through that they're living it and they're doing it. So it's not just the theoretical textbook. They're actually talking to people in industry and they're able to give feedback, direct feedback to the kids. Hey, what do I really need to do? What do I really need to expect? And when Jim was talking to the instructor, he said, it's the real deal. This isn't just something that looks good on paper. This really is effective within the classrooms. The kids, as they're going through this program, they do get OSHA 10 certification. So, that is a certification they need if they're going to go out into the trades. Schools are, because it's a not-for-profit and they get donations from the building industry, we can apply yearly for grants, a $5,000 grant for, let's say, projects within the program. If they're going to build a shed or if they're going to do other projects which are aligned to the curriculum, we can put in for an application to grant, and they're going to help support us either financially or put us in contact with builders directly to provide us the materials, 2x4s, roofing, sheathing, nails, things of that nature. They also, for students that successfully complete the program, oftentimes every graduate is awarded what they call a scholarship, which is about a $500 scholarship specifically designed so that the students going out in the workforce can purchase their work boots, can purchase, a tool belt, some of the basic necessities that, an employer is going to just expect them to have when they come out there. So it really, everybody we've talked to, just this seems like a fantastic program. And, we always say college and career, college and career. This really is that career piece. It's definitely going to be a challenge in the world of COVID. And we're hoping that, there's going to be some way that we can get these kids hands-on as quickly as we can. But with a program like this and with being able to have access to the resources and the speakers, I think it's going to keep these kids engaged. And I know we're going to be able to make it happen distance learning, but boy, when we're ready to have boots on the ground, this class is going to be ready to run. So we are very, very excited to find this partnership. And that is entirely the result of Jim Waltz, our construction teacher. He has just been, I cannot speak highly enough for him. He's absolutely fabulous.
That's great, Mr. Eckert. Thank you very much for the explanation. And again, thank Jim Waltz, did you say?
Yeah, Waltz.
Okay. Thank him too for reaching out and finding this program. It's just a fantastic program for any of our children. Do we have any questions or comments from board members? If not, I'll make a motion to approve.
I move that we approve. this agreement with Home Building Foundation?
Oh, I just made the motion. So Randy made the motion.
I'll second that.
Second.
Okay, who is the second? Mr. Crawford?
Frank.
That's correct.
So roll call vote. Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Boone?
Yes.
Mr. Allison?
Yes.
Mr. Fleury?
Yes.
Mr. Scott?
Yes.
Mr. Crawford?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Thank you again, Mrs. Larson and Mr. Eckert. Okay, moving on to new business, page 11. Categorical program, number one, new board policy 5020.1, comprehensive and targeted support improvement. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold public hearing regarding new board policy 5020.1, comprehensive and targeted support and improvement. The public hearing is now open. Ms. Larson?
Yes, so the Every Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA, requires that the California Department of Ed determine school eligibility for the Comprehensive Support and Improvement, otherwise known as the CSI program, based on the California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress, or the CASP scores. So this policy is in accordance with the CSBA sample policy for CSI and also the current state and federal law.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Larson. Is there any comments or questions from board members? If not, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close public hearing.
Motion to close by Mr. Fleury. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Randy Davis.
Second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Yes.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Now we'll entertain a motion regarding board policy 0520.1. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve policy 0520-1.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Boone.
Yes.
Mr. Allison.
Yes.
Mr. Fleury.
Yes.
Ms. Scott.
Yes.
Mr. Crowder.
Yes.
Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Purchasing Department, item 1, resolution 2020-21/04, disposal of surplus and warrant district property for the 2021 school year. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board to approve the resolution to dispose of surplus and warrant district property by public/private sale, donation, recycle, or discard for the 2021 school year. Mr. Horn?
Yes, so these next three items that we are basically our annual procedural items that we bring to the board. So it gives us the ability to, the first one is to dispose of items that have reached end of life, which is our normal practice for at the school district. Be happy to answer any questions about it.
Do we have any questions or comments from board members?
I have one question. how are they going to advertise to the public that we have this? What do they do for the advertisement of it?
So as far as advertising, we do not advertise and sell any of our disposal unless it carries a value that is greater than basically what it would cost to put it up for auction. So majority of what we do is really once it's reached its end of life, it's no longer viable in the district. It poses a safety hazard. It could be, you know, usually it's broken or you know, costs more to do anything really with.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks.
Any other questions or comments? If not, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, seven yes. Purchasing Department number 2, Resolution 2020-21/05. Disposal of obsolete textbooks and instructional materials for the 2021 school year. Purpose of the agenda item is request the board approve the resolution to authorize the disposal of obsolete elementary and secondary textbooks along with instructional materials for the 2021 school year. I think as Mr. Horn said, these 1, 2, and 3 are our annual. Do we have any questions or comments from board members for Mr. Horn? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second that.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Okay, roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Thank you, Madam Department number 3, Resolution 2020-21/06, state contract. Purpose of the agenda item is request the board approve the resolution to acquire materials, equipment, supplies, services, and vehicles through the use of various states of California Department of General Services and Department of Technology contract. Do we have any questions from board members or comments? Again, I think Mr. Horner, correct me, this is so we can piggyback off of other folks to buy things, is that right?
That's correct. These are state contracts that are negotiated by the Department of General Services. And annually, we use these contracts when it's in the best interest of the school district to do so, but it gives us a really great starting point to negotiate with vendors when we already come in with an already set negotiated price. So these are valuable when the opportunity arises for us.
Any other comments or questions? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
A motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Educational services, number 1. 7th through 12th grade core and elective curriculum programs for independent study adoption. The purpose of the agenda item is request the board hold a public hearing for the approval of 7th through 12th core and elective curriculum programs for the independent study option through addendum. Okay, public hearing is now open. Dr. Greco, you can correct me on that.
Thank you, President Rasmussen. So what we have here is essentially creating a virtual academy for our independent studies program. So we still have our standard curricular options, but what this does is it creates one unified virtual curriculum that for a teacher coming in may not have to learn a bunch of new curriculums if they're going to be teaching in an independent studies format where you would be teaching multiple subjects, especially at the secondary level. So this allows that teacher to focus on the relationship and the intervention with the student. Edmentum is a program that we have been using throughout the district at the continuation schools and for credit remediation at the high schools. What this would do as we've moved from an hourly independent studies to a core independent studies program is allow just to have that one simplified curriculum for the teachers to use so they can work with that and focus on the relational components with.
Thank you, Dr. Greco. Any questions or comments from board members? If not, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Mrs. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Taylor.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7, yes. Now we need a motion regarding the instructional materials. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve, Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7, yes. Next we have business services, an informational item. The purpose of the agenda item is to review the 45-day budget revision with the board of trustees. Mrs. Lossing?
Thank you, Board President Rasmussen, governing board members. Mr. Williams is going to share the screen with the presentation. It's my understanding. Is that correct, Mr. Williams? There we go. So next slide, please. This is our 2020-21 45-day budget revision. We're going to look at our budget and LCAP cycle. We're going to review significant changes to our revenue, look at estimates of increases in our expenditures. We're going to talk about cash deferrals, what they are, and look at our cash flow for the current year. Next slide. This may not necessarily be a familiar stop along the way of our budget, but a 45-day budget revision is necessary if there are material or significant changes from when we adopt our budget in June for the current year, and then compared to the state adopted budget. We use the May assumptions to build our budget, and then when the state adopts its budget, if it's a significant difference from that, those May revised assumptions, then we would present those changes to you like I'm doing today per Ed Code. Next slide. This may look familiar, our annual LCAP and budget cycle. We started effective July 1st with the current year adopted budget, and the red X shows us here in August already with significant changes, you know, obviously due to the impact from COVID-19. This particular cycle helps us keep in mind what set of numbers we're looking at for every presentation. This time we're looking at current year. Next month, we'll be looking at prior year actuals. So, and then the different colors in this cycle indicate what year we're referring to. The blue is current year. The goldenrod would be last year. And then when we get into January, we actually start looking at the following year, next year. And that's the green wheels on the cycle. Next slide, please. So here are the significant revenue changes for our general fund. And there are some big changes. We have an increase of 8.2 million in our local control funding formula. That's going to restore us to the 1920 funding level, except that there would be zero COLA for this year. And that is significantly different from the budget we adopted, because if you'll recall, we had a 7.9% decrease in our LCFF according to what the May revise looked like. But by the time they finished the state budget, they restored our funding to last year's level with zero COLA for this year. And then on our unrestricted side, what you'll see at the next official report will be the fact that we budgeted CARES Act funds on the unrestricted side of the budget. At the time, we expected to get $4 million for the CARES Act, which is our coronavirus aid, relief, and economic security, or CARES Act funds. But now we know with the state adopted budget that those funds are restricted. So the arrow there shows that the increase of 4.7 million on the unrestricted side actually moves over and increases the restricted side of our budget by a total of $14.9 million CARES Act funds that included in that is our learning loss mitigation funds. Important to know regarding these funds, $10.3 million is to be spent by December 30th of this year. And then we have an additional $4.6 million that we have until the end of next year, and actually into September of 2022 to spend. So a significant increase in revenues. And next slide, please. I wanted to just touch base with you, because I know you probably recall when we presented our estimated actuals for last year, we included a contribution from the general fund over to our cafeteria fund, because when we shut school down in March, the participation in our school meals significantly, and that resulted in a significant loss of revenue. So we also, not knowing what this year would look like, which we hear a lot, we added that into the budget. But considering that we're already starting with distance learning, and it appears that distance learning, indicates a decrease in participation, I just wanted you to be aware that we could need to increase that contribution. We don't know yet, and it looks like our contribution for last year maybe a bit less than the 1.2 million, which would be wonderful. And I also need to add that there is nothing inefficient or ineffective about our nutrition services program. We actually have an outstanding program. It's just the fact that we have certain overhead with all of the labor you know, an additional food cost for the packaging and so forth due to COVID, and then that reduced that reduction in revenue, it isn't enough to offset our overhead. Therefore, the contribution from general fund to cafeteria fund 13. Next slide, please. So here I've included just some examples of the estimated cost increases. We're actually still putting all of those together, and actual costs will be determined. But I wanted to just kind of put in some placeholders for some costs so that we're aware of sort of the magnitude of what we're expending on things like our personal protective equipment, you know, all of our disposable face masks, face shields, disposable gloves, etc. You'll hear more about this later when we talk about the reopening plan. Our technology, my goodness, the internet connectivity, potential costs, and what we're looking at right now, online textbooks, you know, all the distance learning instructional strategies and materials. We've purchased Chromebook insurance. We have staff devices, student devices, potentially additional staffing in the technology area. But, you know, just many, many new costs due to COVID. Things like our sanitizing and cleaning, the hand sanitizer in every classroom, in every, you know, area of our all of our sites, disinfectant wipes, thermometers, and then we've ordered several of quite expensive temperature scanners for some of the secondary schools that'll eliminate the one-on-one temperature taking. Electrostatic sprayers for the deep cleaning that could be needed if you have someone who tests positives or may. We have those electrostatic sprayers that we've purchased. And I believe we have one for every site. Transportation, we've talked before about the need for social distancing on our buses. And so that will add additional bus driver routes and as soon as school comes, you know, starts again. There'll be, with additional routes, there'll be additional fuel, additional maintenance for buses, you know, so many miles requires so much maintenance and so forth. And then I'm gonna go on with the next slide, please. So here, I gave up on the cost of these right now because we don't quite have it all identified yet, but we may be needing additional custodial staff. You know, it seems practical that we would, given the fact that we already have duties for all of our custodians full time, and with the need for extra cleaning, therefore we could quite potentially need additional staff. There'll be potentially more professional development than what we already have planned. Again, the addition to nutrition services, we talked a little bit about that already. And then I added in potentially bus aids for our buses to help health screen the students who will ride the bus and then monitor them to maintain the social distancing. So I don't have actual costs for all of that. It's really early in the year and everything is still evolving, but I needed to make you aware, and especially the fact that we do have significant COVID funds, there are significant cost increases to go along with that. Now, next slide, please. So then we had, you heard about the increase back to last year levels for our local control funding formula. That's all good and well. And so the state said that we're going to receive that funding, but they actually don't have enough money to pay us for all. So it's interesting. So that's what cash deferrals are. They occur when the state doesn't have enough cash to pay the school districts for our monthly apportionment. And our monthly apportionment is, I want to say, right at about $103 million. And that apportionment is made up of all the students that attend and the days that they attend, we get so much per student per day to make up that big amount. Cash is king, there's Elvis. Next slide, please. Thank you. And so now that you know a little bit about what the cash deferrals are, this slide tells us, looks at last year, actually, you know, just June, the end of June 30th was the end of the 1920 fiscal year. And the cash deferrals actually began then. They, the state did not pay us our $9 million of apportionment payment in June. They waited until July. So we booked it like we will, you know, as a receivable, if you, that we, it's on our books that we're gonna get it, but it actually, the state took it off of their books. So it's a little bit of interesting accounting that the state's able to do, but we did get that money in July, and then we got our regular July apportionment as well. But that was the beginning. Now, next slide, please. This is what we're looking at for this year. And the left-hand side is the is our current fiscal year, and the right-hand side is the 21-22 fiscal year. So starting in February, next February 2021, the deferrals are going to begin. And what these amounts are actually the state dollar amounts in billions, but what that February deferral for our school district will be is $3.4 million. And they're gonna supposedly pay us in November of the next fiscal year for that $3.4 million of cash. And then when we get to March, it goes up to $5.1 million that they anticipate paying in October. April, another $5.1 million that we won't be receiving until September. May, also $5.1 million for us in August. And then June is the whopper, $7.7 million that we should get right there in July again, like they did to us this year. And that all equals that $26.4 million in cash that, while the state restored that funding, they don't actually have the money to pay us. So fortunately, if we go to the next slide, thank you, thank you, thank you, Board of Trustees, for being so prudent over the years in your fiduciary responsibilities for the district, because we do have a healthy cash flow. And obviously, from what I showed you, and that's this year, not even looking at the following year yet, but we're gonna need it. So this, these numbers are the actual cash we ended with in 18-19, and then the projected for closing the books, and that will probably change a bit when they get the books closed, and you'll see that projected 19-20 number in September. And that'll be an accurate, you know, done closed books number. And then what we're projecting this year with those deferrals is a ending fund cash of about, well, $22.6 million. And then that'll change as 19-20 might change. You know, it could be more. And so that is what I wanted to share with you. Lots of volatility. But on the books, we're receiving, you know, back to last year's level for our local control funding formula, which is the main funding for our district. It's just that everybody's experiencing that cash shortage because the state is, they're pushing it off to the school districts. We're no different than other school districts. Everybody's getting the same amount of deferrals. I'm assuming that many of them are not as in as good a shape as we are. So we should be grateful for that, and I thank you. And with that's the end of my presentation. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Yeah, hi, Penny, this is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, I have some questions. Okay, so we start back on significant revenue changes in the general fund. Mm-hmm. And after we take out the restricted, we end up with 11.4. And then we go to the estimated cost increases, your examples. Mm-hmm. Are those restricted or unrestricted?
Those would be using the restricted funds.
Okay, those are using the restricted funds. Okay. Okay, and that's part of the CARES Act?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so we end up with about 9.9 then with the unrestricted side.
Right, and my thought was that, you know, the significant portion of that must be expended by December 30th this year, but the rest of it, we have that couple of years, so we may be able to hold on to a bit of it to help us with cash flow, and then some of the expenses may be over a two-year period. We'd be able to fund them in that manner.
Okay, so all the cost increases or estimated cost increases are restricted funds?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions? So, Penny, I have one kind of on the CARES funds that we're receiving. Those are certainly one-time funds. If you have a couple different dates, the first $10 million by December 30th, 2020, and then the remaining 4.6 to be used by September 30, 2022. So those funds are actually designed to try to help us through this pandemic. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So it would be very prudent to make sure that we're not doing ongoing costs with any of these types of funding, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I did want to, something I neglected to share was that the funds that are to be expended by December, we can also use additional costs we incurred in 1920. So from March till the end of June, if there were costs that were COVID related, we can use these funds for that as well. So.
Okay, the second question I have, in your crystal ball, this has to do with deferrals. In your crystal ball, do we think these deferrals are going to continue in 21 or 22?
Unless the state ends up with more cash, I would say they probably will, unless our economy recovers. Because as you know, school districts budgets only do as well as the state budget. It's because we're a portion of that.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Is there any other comments or questions from board members?
Thank you very much, Penny, for that report.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Okay, next we have student services. Number one, 2020-21, MJUSD proposed pandemic school plan, school reopening plan update. The purpose of the agenda item is for staff to provide an update on the 2020-21 MJUSD proposed pandemic school reopening plan. This is an informational and discussion item. Mr. Stan?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I just want to explain why it's under student services. And again, it's because we recognize that we're experiencing a pandemic and that really our goal is to prevent the spread of COVID-19, ensure the health and safety of all of our students and staff, maintain relationships, and facilitate student learning. And within the context that we are in a pandemic and that and that's where our planning started, was specifically in program services. And that our instructional model is a tool to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. Also, as I said earlier, it's been very foggy since late spring as to what the reopening would look like. Sort of like a snow globe, when a snow globe is shaking and it's, you can't see the image inside. But not that it's settled, but it's settled some. And so we want to share some of the revisions of the plan that we've had from updates. I'm going to share some of the revisions of the plan, and also to give you a snapshot of what opening day looks like tomorrow, first day of school. So batting first, our Director of Categorical Services, Jamie Larson, who's been, and I'll tell board members, you have a hard copy dated 8/5/2020, and that's what we're using as reference.
Well, thank you. I'm back again. So I've been on a bunch tonight, but I just wanted to share a little bit about the plan, how it develops, and all of the work that has gone into creating this very comprehensive plan. So it's the result of input from thousands of parent surveys, hundreds of public comments, input from teachers through surveys, meetings, written responses, multiple, in some cases daily, and most certainly weekly, sessions with principals and directors, along with presentations to the board and to the public. So this, the collective conversation, correspondence, and collaboration contributed to the design of this comprehensive plan that will launch the 2021 school year tomorrow morning. As you can imagine, as quickly as COVID-19 developments unfold, that this document is doing the same. It is fluid. It must be changed to reflect the current guidance from local, state, and national health professionals. The plan has to be updated strategically. It has been, and it will continue to be, depending on the status of the COVID-19 spread throughout our community in the coming weeks and months. The plan truly is a living document, and it's hard to believe that after hundreds and hundreds of hours of preparation, that tomorrow is the big day. Mr. Cena?
And at core, fundamental of our plan, and collectively as a population and a community, are the five principles: social distancing, facial coverings, healthy hand hygiene, daily symptoms checks, and disinfectant. And much of this is still the same in the plan, but our Director of Program Services, Jessica Goof, is going to share some revisions that were made to certain sections.
Hello, can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
Great. Sometimes my microphone doesn't work, so let me know if I cut out. I really appreciate the opportunity to participate in this planning process, and I wanted to share a few things that we've added since we shared the guide with you at the last board meeting. We have added the California Department of Public Health guidelines around recommendations on facial coverings. All students will wear facial coverings. Students third grade or above who cannot comply with wearing facial coverings can be excluded from attending school in person and will be placed on distance learning. Children 2 years old through second grade will be encouraged but cannot be excluded if they can't wear a facial covering. That's from the Office of the California Department of Public Health. In special circumstances where facial coverings cannot be used for either developmental or pedagogical reasons, a face shield may be used as long as social distance is maintained, but staff must return to wearing a facial covering outside of the classroom.
Thank you, Jessica. So those five key principles, those five fundamental practices, those were pages 6 and 7. At the bottom of page 7, maintaining a healthy environment, sharing an update and a preview of what in preparation for tomorrow, our Director of Grounds and Maintenance, Mr. Travis Barnett.
Well, as of today, all plexiglass partitions have been put in place at the front of each front office at each school. Purchasing department is on standby taking requests for any additional partitions needed, and have them distributed as supplies come in. applied. We have all HVAC filters, which are MERV 13 rated, will continuously be monitored and changed more frequently than manufacturer suggested guidelines. We have all HVAC units set to run continuously during business hours to keep airflow at a maximum. District-wide, we've installed 500 hand sanitizer stations and are continually installing more as they come in. Our custodial staff have been properly trained in disinfecting and have been working around the clock to ensure surfaces are clean on a rotational basis throughout the day. We have an abundance of disinfecting supplies and will continue to keep safety our number one priority.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about PPE and basically in three stages. The first stage would be, what is at the schools? The second would be, what do we have at the district office? And the third would actually be what we have ordered and coming in within the next week or two. The first would be our having the schools fully stocked with disinfectant soaps and towels. That has been done already. And like Travis said, we have 500 hand sanitizing stations that are already installed and more are actually on the way. We have roughly 2,000 gallons separately of hand sanitizer that can be used in various spots of the schools. As far as the actual face masks, each teacher has an allotment of 3 masks and they have 3 face shields. As far as students, they also have 5 masks for the child size and for the adult size. And we also have roughly 1 thermometer for every 80 students. Now, what we have with the district, we have a surplus to supplement the schools when needed. We have at least 50,000 of the adult masks and of the children masks. We have face shields in a quantity of 3,000. We have sneeze guards. And we did end up getting 500,000 of the wristbands that are going to be used for temperature checks when we do go live. And then what we have on order, Penny mentioned, we have the facial recognition systems that are coming in. It will be for the secondary schools. We procured full sheets of plexiglass that we're going to use to set up custom-built areas for the schools where they might need for isolation rooms. And we also have the additional child shields that are coming in, as well as a supplemental mask for adults and child.
Thank you, Brian. First day of school lunch, our Director of Nutrition Services, Amber Watson, is gonna share what lunch is like tomorrow.
Yes, we have a much more robust program planning for the start of tomorrow. We are going to restore to a daily meal service with a hot lunch being cooked for service in the noon hour. And along with that, we're providing a supper and snack for later in the day, as well as a breakfast for the morning. The other significant change is a meal card or a meal punch card that is going out in the mail to households this week. Parents will be able to use that to pick up meals, and this will allow us to provide the meals served to parents without children being in the car. We have almost every school site open this year, so with a few closures just because of the vicinity of nearby campuses. So with the Kynoch and McKinney neighboring schools, we're serving only out of Kynoch. And with the Loma Rica and the Foothill campuses being so close, we've consolidated to Foothill. And the last big change for starting tomorrow is our partnership with the transportation department to deliver meals to our most high-risk populations.
And our Director of Transportation, Greg Taylor, is going to share that relationship.
As part of the Stronger Together, we will be applying hand sanitizers to the students' hands before they take their seats on the bus. And they wanted to make that change as to the report that you have seen. It didn't make it to the final report, but we'll be doing it. And during the distance learning period, we have developed 12 food routes for our high-risk students. And we will start servicing 254 students every day. Our drivers are excited to be back and working and are especially excited about seeing our kids again. As part of this process, the drivers will wear all of their personal protective equipment, which include gloves and masks. Of course, they will sanitize the bus after they're done with their route.
Thank you, Greg. That takes us to page 11. On page 12, it talks about maintaining healthy operations. And Penny Blossom is going to share with us some changes based on stakeholder feedback from the public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. So additional ways we're going to maintain healthy operations. We'll be pursuing virtual group events and virtual gatherings or meetings if possible. Definitely promoting the 6 feet of distance between people if a meeting or gathering must be in person. The meeting or gathering size will also be limited to the extent possible. We'll limit non-essential visitors, volunteers, and activities from all of our sites that involve external groups or organizations, especially if a group or individual is not from the local community. At the school sites, we will hold virtual activities in lieu of the actual activities for field trips, student assemblies, special performances, and then when we have the school-wide parent meetings like back-to-school nights and open houses in the spring. Outside the classrooms, we're going to work on the arrival and departures each day to minimize the contact between students, staff, families in the community. We'll designate routes for entry and exits using as many entrances as feasible, and then we'll use those plexiglass partitions that you've heard about already to avoid exposure.
And maintaining healthy operations on page 14, there's some additions from the August 3rd California Department of Public Health. As you look at where it says classroom space, and you go down to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, actually square, it says plan for social distancing during fire and intruder drills. Activities where there's increased likelihood for transmission from contaminated exhale droplets, such as band and choir practice and performances, are not permitted. And the next one, activities that involve singing must only take place outdoors. And the last one there is consider using privacy boards or clear screens to increase and enforce separation between staff and students. Now, on page 15 and 16, there's also updates from that same, before that, on page 15, just pointing out that in the middle of page 15, it talks about a school site designated point of contact. Every school site, 23 sites at in Marysville Joint Unified School District has two points of contact that are going to connect with points of contact at the district office, who are the points of contact with public health, so that communication is direct and consistent, and that all of these designated points of contact, we are all engaged in contact tracing training, so that we have, say, 46 umpires, and we're all calling balls and strikes in a similar fashion. So the idea is to read the situation in the same way, communicate it tight, get information back, and be able to serve students, families, staff as best as possible. On page 15, there's an update from August 3rd, CDPH publication, and Mr. Carrion is going to share with us physical education and youth sports changes.
Yeah, thank you, Superintendent Cena. And while we all miss the roar of a Friday night crowd or the thumping of volleyballs in the gym, and certainly the excitement of playground and children running up and down and using their apparatus or playing on the playground, it's important to punctuate that some of the guidelines, or the guidelines that are now out, supersede Dr. Liu's May 11th guidance, but ultimately punctuate the fact that smaller groups will be better and safer, and it's important to ensure that social distancing is always followed when we do get to a point where we could utilize safer outdoor environments and ultimately ensure that we keep safety in mind as our children utilize playgrounds, as we participate in what now will be late winter, early spring sports, and also the same types of guidelines will be utilized in PE-based physical education environments.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. And so, as Mr. Carrion shared with Dr. Liu, this is as recent as yesterday. You can actually take page, you don't have to literally do this, but page 38, the last page, you can rip that up, and it no longer applies because particularly the third bullet down on page 16 now is the new policy regarding youth sports and PE and physical activity. That was as of yesterday. Our again, Penny Lotzing on page 17 is going to share a check-in, check-out process that's taking place in all offices and at all school sites.
Thank you. Tomorrow, when people come to the schools, they'll use their cell phones to scan the QR codes there, and that'll take them to the MJUSD contact tracing check-in and out form. Basically, everyone upon entering and leaving the facility each day will scan the QR code with their cell phone, or they could use a computer if their cell phone doesn't work in that manner. Then they'll log into the contact tracing form and ask each person that accesses it to affirm that they've performed a self-screening for COVID-19 symptoms and that they're symptom-free prior to entering the facility. The check-in and out process also includes using the hand sanitizer, and those are all located next to our QR codes to scan, and then wiping down and disinfecting their work areas frequently throughout the day.
Thank you, Penny. Page 19, we start instructional programs, as we said. Instructional delivery programs are a tool to help slow the spread of COVID-19. Dr. Rocco Greco is going to help us with pages 19, 20, and the top of 21, introducing instructional programs.
Well, just briefly, and this is kind of one of those catchphrases I think we're hearing all over the place, is that distance learning now is not going to look like distance learning from the spring of last year. And I can't reiterate enough how it should almost have a different name for what we're doing, because the amount of energy and preparation that folks have put into making sure that this will be a wonderful year for our students. Our teachers and administrators embody being lifelong learners. And over the summer and ever since last March, they have worked diligently to try and figure out and determine what's the best way for us to be able to educate in this environment. And while this rapid change is difficult, we'd much rather be in the classroom with our students. This type of change spurs an evolution of thought and practices in response to it. One major change on top of this for this year, and I can't stress this enough, is that this is accountable. This is real, it's not preseason. So if you're in high school, the grades go towards your transcript and will count to application for college. The learning is gonna be tracked, the attendance is tracked. So it's like we would have in a normal year, only from our homes. And so in that, we have until September 1 until the tracking with the state goes live. So starting on time gives us a few weeks to work out the kinks and the little parts that when you change a major system, you're not going to see until you actually get into the flow of it. So those have all changed. But I get the lucky part of this presentation to be able to take a moment to screen share with you guys what has gone on over the summer. And so can everybody see my screen?
Yeah.
Okay. So we voted, and so sometimes we talk about things in a lot of educational jargon about what's going on, but I wanted to take a minute to show the board or any community that's out there watching what this unified platform did for us. So before, you had teachers working diligently trying to get information out to families, and it could be different depending on the teacher, and we were all figuring out what we were going to use. So now what we've done in order to simplify this process for everyone, no matter what school you would go to, you're going to find a very, very similar interface. So if you came to the Lyndhurst High website, any family, you go to teachers' websites and you just pick, I'm going to go to the arts department and I'm going to select this kind teacher here, Michelle Greco. And what happens is when you click that link, it immediately takes you to her Google site. So the Google site is the public interface. This is a place where parents, people who are going to be helping the students, working with them, can come in and be able to see everything that's going on that's not private to the student. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. So if Mrs. Greco assigned work for either her ceramics or art class and the assignments were due, so this is all linked through the Aries gradebook in the Google Classroom, those are going to show up on the calendar. So any assignments that are happening, anything that she wants the parents or people who are helping students to know is going to show here. Because part of what we realize in the success of this, when you create distance learners, not necessarily by choice, you put a burden on the family and you put a burden on the student to take some intrinsic motivation that's extra on what they're doing academically. This allows the parents and people to be able to see all of those things. Most of our teachers have done an amazing job so far of getting this all ready and amongst everything else they're doing. Little to get to know them, slideshows, presentations, links, and things that they can get to in order to be able to see that relationships are important to us. Now, the important part, I think, for this as well is, so we're looking at a high school site right now, but if we were to skip down to an elementary school and go to Edgewater, parent has a kid at Edgewater as well as the high school, it's the same interface. You come to the staff page, you go and you select whichever teacher you want to see. Here we're going to look at Ms. Schuschler's and her kindergarten classroom, absolutely amazing. It's got all of the stuff linked to the site to show families, gives information so you kind of know about your teacher as you're going in. Not only do you have the calendar for any assignments for that as well as resources, you've got an appointment calendar if you're needing to set up appointments with the teacher, as well as a bunch of resources and things that are linked. As you look up here, there's links to the online learning as well. You jump up to higher grade elementary, you go to Covalod, you've got these things where you can go in to see the virtual classroom. So if I'm a parent and I'm going, you know, what have they done to prepare? You go in and you see that same love and personality that our teachers put into the classroom, put into these sites. So as much as this was a learning curve for many different people, they put the time in over the summer and they embody what it is to form relationships with our community. And they've done that through creating this single platform. The other thing I want to highlight, just grabbing a junior high site because we haven't looked. One thing that Marysville did differently than many of the other districts is we didn't cut away our CTE and music programs. We recognize that the arts, the music, CTE are the things that bring kids to school. If we're going to have kids on a computer all day long or working on and off the computer so that they're on and they're doing work and they're coming back, there's got to be joy in that. There's got to be something that draws the kids in. So I encourage the board members or community to go to your local school site, go to a school, jump onto that staff list for anywhere you go, and you'll be able to pull up the sites to be able to see what they're doing all across the district. And so with that, I just kind of wanted to take this opportunity to show the Google sites in the classroom, to show how this is all linked together. Now with the Google Classrooms, when people go in, the classroom won't be able to be seen by everybody. So I'm going to stop the share there. The classrooms are private, and those are only for students, and that's for student security of data and information. What I will show you is one classroom, just real quick. The art teacher at Lyndhurst was kind enough to allow me in her classroom briefly before we have student information populated. So if I go to look inside a Google Classroom, so this would be art at the high school, and you come in and you can see the assignments, nothing's due yet, but you start to see the thread of what's coming up for students. They can go from the stream to classwork to see anything that's assigned. And so in this place, she's created a relaxation station. So little things where kids are getting tired, burnt out, stressed, there's a place that they're able to go in. And it's been created in a manner so that there's activities or events to be able just to take a moment. As you go to the different art galleries, there's yoga, meditation, different things that students can do to kind of base themselves again as part of a social emotional check-in. So that's all stuff that comes out of the classrooms. And this is where teachers will be able to post the work that will then link up to the sites for parents to be able to easily find and access to be able to support their students as we move forward.
Very nice.
Thank you, Dr. Greco. Big part of distance learning, the ability for distance learning is connectivity. And our Director of Instructional Technology, Mr. Brian Williams, is going to share what the department's been working, well, collectively, been working on.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. As you can see, our teachers have just been doing an amazing job. It's an absolute pleasure to work with them and to see their excitement and their willingness to try new things. It's been fantastic. We want to make sure that we get all that information to the students in the best way we can. A lot of that starts with internet connectivity. We have a number of students both in the Valley and a whole large percentage of students up in the hills, especially once you get up towards the challenge area, even better. that don't have reliable internet services. So we started handing out for down in the valley the free T-Mobile hotspots today to the school site. They will start to be distributed tomorrow morning, and we will start to get those out. I had a meeting yesterday with a local installer. We're looking at, for the foothills, so in the foothill area, they do have some new cell towers. They're all different providers. So we're working with some of the T-Mobile. I've talked to our Verizon reps. I talked to AT&T now to see if whichever one's going to work best. For those that aren't close enough to a tower, we've worked with the media yesterday. We're talking to Fusenet. He's going to start doing his site surveys for the area just to make sure that we can see what we have so that we can get everyone. Fusenet is not going to be as reliable, but we want to do everything we can to get them the best education possible. If it's not to get them on their Chromebook to log in, for them to do their assignments, if we continue to record if we start doing and record our lessons on the flash drive, thumb drive, they can watch, instead of having to have the video streaming over the internet, they can watch their lesson and then have enough connectivity to do the work that they need to do. I've talked to the digital path to see if some of the line of sight areas that they may be able to hit for us. And so we've talked to all of those. As I said, they're going to start going out tomorrow in the valley. I'll be sending a message out to the foothills by the end of the week, letting them know where we stand there and how long I think that process is going to take. It's going to take a little bit longer, especially once you get into satellite installation. And so I want to make sure that they hear from me, and it'll be with a phone call, it'll be with an email. I think that they get email, they'll hear what that process is going to look like moving forward. That way they'll be able to utilize the Chromebooks. Took a look before the thing started. We checked out approximately 10,000 Chromebooks already, and the school starts tomorrow. And so that's just an amazing number. The school sites have just been incredible. They've worked really, really hard to get those Chromebooks out. And when they handed those out, we've also given them instructions, both in English and Spanish, on how to log into those Chromebooks. I'm actually going to share my screen here real quick as well. So you kind of see what they're going to look like. We've been working on creating a distance learning site. It's available on our main MJUSD page. And on that, we've got what's now called Clever. With Clever, we want to make sure that both parents and students know how to access the information that we're trying to provide for them. We've got some instructions up here that they'd be able to download. These are the same ones that we handed out. We'll be building this more and more. In an effort to make it as easy as possible, we started to utilize Clever. Now, when a student logs into an MJUSD Chromebook, they only have to hold a little QR code up to the camera. Once they do that, they log into Clever, which is what we have here. And as you can see, it's just a single button click for whatever, if it's a Google Classroom or whatever the curriculum is for the teachers to get to. We wanted to eliminate having to remember usernames and passwords as much as possible. We wanted to make it easy for a kindergarten student or parents who haven't done this before to be able to get in easily and access everything there. And so that's what we've been doing there to help students, parents, and the teachers. They've just been doing a fantastic job of getting that information out there. So that's what we've been doing on the technology side.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Tomorrow's opening day is unlike any other opening day of school. Also, your federal CARES money at service, as Mr. Williams demonstrated. Also, tomorrow, there are many questions from stakeholders concerned. They have special students with special needs. And so our Director of Student Services, Christina Roy, is going to share what parents can expect with distance learning opening the school. Christina, did you hear?
I see you're on there. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Cena, and good evening, Board of Trustees. For our students with disabilities, documentation of specific supports and services during distance learning are added to each student's plan. Families of students with disabilities will be fully informed about how their child's learning needs will be addressed, and their learning will continue in a distance learning model until a blended learning model or a full-time in-person learning model can be offered. instructional programs and specialized supports in the 2021 school year will look different than what was provided in the spring of the 1920 school year, with students provided more individualized and robust programs. District educators have been planning tirelessly for even better delivery of this instruction and support for the coming school year. Distance learning has evolved to provide a better benefit to students and is more flexible, more creative, more collaborative, and incorporates aspects of social emotional learning. New rules and regulations have been put in place requiring districts to ensure students benefit from the distance and blended learning models. The Student Services Department has met with staff to share these guidelines. Staff members understand students will be provided daily live instruction by a credentialed teacher or licensed service provider. Staff is coordinating their efforts, working collaboratively with student schedules, and communicating through common forms. Parents have been sent information through letters describing the program supports and services their children will receive in distance learning. This year, each student will have an emergency circumstances plan added to their individual plan. This describes supports to be put in place due to any emergency producing a school closure of 10 days or more. Students' special learning needs still continue to be supported by the individual distance learning plans, which will be reviewed by their teams and then considered for any changes with parents and staff involvement. The Student Services Department will continue to support staff supporting students and families through regular meetings and meetings to be scheduled as often as changes in the guidelines require.
Thank you. At the bottom of page 22, it talks about instructional models, distance learning. Again, Dr. Rocco Greco is going to share what the first day of school is going to look like.
Thank you, Superintendent. I'm going to share the screen one more time. Just briefly on the schedules, there wasn't a lot of change since last time we talked, a little bit of wiggling of time to make sure that we could line up lunches and services. What I want to do briefly is just kind of explain what the days will look like as they come in. And so we'll be starting on a Wednesday, but every day has a lot of similarity to it. So the first 30 minutes of the day is kind of set to just check in with the students, make sure they're there, engage for the day, that they're able to connect, that they have what they need. If not, that we're able to ferret out where we're having connectivity issues early on to hopefully be able to assist to make sure they're available for the day. What you're going to see, the blue time, is the core academic instructional time. So how this will go at each school site will be dependent on the needs of the school. And so when a teacher is doing English or math or social science or science at the elementary, those times may shift, and that'll be communicated, and it probably already has. From the sites to the families. I know for my own daughter at Covalod, we've received what time she'll be doing where. Many of the sites are setting up individual appointments with the families in these first few days to make sure that everyone has everything they need to work at distance on the Chromebooks. And then if we need to have paper support or get anything set up for the foothills, that we have consumables and paper materials available, recognizing that some of the connectivity issues are going to take us a while to be able to solve. We need to make sure that we're offering everything to all of our students through that time. So after you leave the academic time, we have a 1 hour break for lunch, which is a bit longer. That allows students, one, if they have to get down to the school and then back to their home, the time to be able to do that. There's an hour block in the afternoon that was designated as academic intervention support enrichment. This is kind of our time for being able to address learning loss. So as students are assessed coming back in to figure out where gaps in knowledge might be or what we need to do to make sure that they're able to progress with the curriculum this year, this gives an opportunity to see where those gaps are and be able to work with students as they need, grouped by need, in small groups or with whole class instruction, one-on-one, or just being available for office hours on a large assignment or something like that in the afternoon. So this addresses the need for there. When you look towards the junior high and high school schedules, you'll see much the same. The only day for all three of these schedules that's a little bit different is Monday. So Monday, it'll have that same check-in, and there will still be time for intervention and support for teachers to be able to pull students as they need. They'll also be doing what we normally have as our minimum days on Wednesday. So they'll be doing that collaboration time to work together on the Mondays. This allows sites the ability to be able to collaborate on a multitude of issues. Some of these being best practice and streamlining of assuring that work maybe across a math department at the high school is going to be in alignment from class to class. So a student in any class is going to be getting roughly the same academic instruction they would be getting across. So that collaboration time is then allowed in there. And then again, in the afternoon, you see that support time. The junior highs, they had a 7-period day at some places. So we've rounded that out with an 8th period, which leaves a core academic advisory, which allows the students to have one place that they're able to do that social emotional check-in, have that advisory teacher that's kind of the ally to be able to help and support them as they move through it. And then at the high schools, what you're gonna see is looks very similar, but with only their 6-period day. So the social emotional check-in on the Mondays is happening either in the 1st period or an advisory block that they've created at the school. You've got that same academic intervention time. And then in our academic time in the morning, we're still providing all of the minimum academic minutes that we're required to by the state to make sure that students, again, are getting everything they need from this year, but with the opportunity to be able to tailor it to what they missed last year or what they may have gaps in existing as we come in. In an effort to provide this, I just want to talk just briefly about professional development for a moment. So at the end of the school year, we had 2 professional development days that teachers were able to take part in. So 12 additional hours of professional development towards online curriculums. A lot of it focused on getting some of the Google work that you saw done earlier in the presentation tonight. But then we also just had 2 more professional development days. So we've had 4 full professional development days over the summer on top of the 2 site days that they've had the last 2 days in order to try to get prepared. Now, when I say that, it's a lot of time, but it's nowhere near as much time as teachers have put in to what they've developed going forward for our kids. Again, I think you saw earlier, the care for our community and for our students, even when we can't be there in person, is represented through what we're trying to do digitally. And we're trying to make sure that that shows through as we do it. I will say with professional development this last time, sometimes we have people participate, sometimes we don't. These are the timesheets that have come in for this week's professional development. So I haven't counted them yet, but I can tell you already it's far greater than any participation we've had in the last 4 or 5 years of professional development. So teachers are taking advantage of the huge offerings we had. So there's between the technology and ed services department, we probably had from publishers and technology about 20 to 30 available links of trainings. Also, if teachers were looking for something different pedagogically, God, I can't talk anymore, I apologize. Some of our music teachers or folks that this didn't fall in for, they asked, can we do this instead? And pretty much anything that was open that would advance what they needed for distance learning, we were able to set up and establish for them this time. So all in all, I think that the PD going into this year was very good. We'll be looking to begin professional development series probably 2 weeks into school. We'll let everybody get settled in, and then we'll begin after school trainings. As teachers tell us what they need and families tell us what they need, we will find the resources and put those together for folks as well.
Thank you, Dr. Greco. One key piece with distance learning in the spring is that really the principal was hold harmless. And in this version of distance learning, SB 98, new ed code, is that when a student is at school or engaged in school less than 60% of the time, what are we doing to help reconnect, to engage those students? And our director of student attendance and discipline, Jolie Critchfield, is going to share intervention that we're going to employ.
Yes, hello everyone. So this is, can everybody hear me? This is what I'm most passionate about out of all the job duties that I hold is getting those kids engaged that have missed school. At the end of last year, well, in March when we did that, like Mr. Cena said, teachers kind of held attendance differently. They either had their Google documents that they kind of kept attendance. We didn't keep attendance through Aries. Not all teachers did. So it was difficult to kind of find which kids weren't engaging. They would report to their principal. It would come to me. We try to get out there and kind of connect. This year, all teachers will be taking attendance on Aries, which is our information system. and documenting interventions as well in areas like they've done just on a regular school day. So this will be able to show us, teachers will be documenting either a kid is just not engaged, though distance learning not engaged, or if the student comes into their classroom a little bit late, they'll have a tardy. And then the attendance clerks will run those reports. Well, the first line of defense will be our school messenger will send out a call alerting parents that their student is not attending. And then our attendance clerks will get that list, and they'll kind of, in our office staff, will kind of generate a list, and they'll be the person that sorts it out to our support staff. So our PASS officers, our school resource officers, our paraprofessionals, all those people taking a list and making those phone calls and exhausting all resources before we need to actually do a home visit. Some of the codes that will be that we'll be able to use when the attendance clerks call in or parents call in, it may be a technology issue. Even though Brian and their office have done an amazing job getting out hotspots, we anticipate there's going to be more of those. So we'll be able to quickly get them to where they need to be through a referral to the technology department to get those things ironed out. And then we'll have students maybe that just refuse to participate, and that's when we go out and do the home visits and do what we need to do to get them connected and find out what's going on as to why they don't want to participate. So, you know, I'm super excited that I'll be able to have this information in my hands, and we can just all work together to make attendance a priority. It's always been a priority for me. So school's important for our community and for our kids and for our families. So do you guys have any questions?
Those come later. Thank you. Thank you. The if you remember, the July 7th version had dark green sections in it, which were our preschool program transcending through. Tonight, our director of our child development program is Kathy Woods, is going to share what tomorrow looks like on the eve of opening day of school.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Cena and Board of Trustees. I appreciate this opportunity to really highlight the efforts of our child development team. We're very excited about welcoming our newest students into the school district, and we are focused on building relationships and connections with those students and their families, knowing that those relationships will be foundational to all learning that happens in our program, whether it is distance learning or in-person instruction. So I wanted to share with you, today was a very special day in our program in that we were, our staff enthusiastically hosted our preschool parent orientations with social distancing, of course, and we got to meet our new students, welcome them to the school district, and to really work one-on-one with the families to make sure that we had shared goals for their children and understood what some of their needs were. Our team, we've talked, the word tirelessly and diligently has come up a number of times throughout this presentation, but our team has worked diligently to create and share resources amongst one another so that we can creatively connect with students through distance learning with the goal of bringing the classroom setting into the student's home. Our plans are extensive, and we will, even with 3 and 4 year olds, we're going to be using Zoom, Learning Genie, take home activities, FaceTime, Google Classroom. We have staff who have also created some of the Bitmoji classrooms with the support of the technology department. So our priority will again remain to be diligent and really work to virtually share our classroom environment, our intercenters, circle times with the students and the families, so that it will create more of a smooth transition for when we can invite students back into our classrooms. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. With distance learning, the glue that's tying distance learning together, Mr. Carrio is going to share about the MOU that was agreed to last week.
Thank you, Tina. And it's a pleasure, first and foremost, to recognize the collective effort of all the departments and the department leaders who came together with an amazing work effort to make this MOU possible. Included in that is, of course, the collaboration with Marysville Unified Teachers Association, and ultimately the input provided by everybody. And what it does, it underscores a couple of different elements that, in my opinion, will strengthen us and move us forward. And first and foremost, I think it's certainly the ability to prepare our teachers and to continually prepare them. Dr. Greco mentioned that we're all naturally lifelong learners, and our teachers are certainly exhibiting that, and they have from the very beginning. But to have the menu of options and to continually prepare and ensure that what our teachers need will be available to them is always going to be an asset. And the fact that we have intelligent, experienced people to put that into their grasp certainly will enhance distance learning. Also important to that progress will be a teacher's comfort. The fact that they can work from home, the fact that they can work from the school site, and the fact that they can be readily available for their own children, and securing a securing comfort that ultimately puts all the resources at their disposal and yet have the comfort of some level of security, whether it's at home or in the workspace, and something that's supported not only by their direct supervisors, the principals, the assistants, but also supported by the resources that are available, and ultimately through a decision that was made uniformly and collaboratively with the Teachers Association. So that end, we want to punctuate the fact that we want to make teachers comfortable. We want to give them everything at their disposal, and ultimately thank everybody for creating opportunities for our teachers to continue to prepare themselves and improve distance learning.
Thank you, Mr. Terrio. And as we've had this glimpse of opening day at school, unlike any other opening day, we're reminded that we are in a pandemic and that we're working to slow the spread of COVID-19. And some additions to the revised document are pages 31, 32, 33. And again, our Director of Program Services, Jessica Goof, is going to share what plans we have when someone gets sick.
So one of the things that we have to plan for is for when someone gets sick. And we have to be on top of that now because we already have staff on our campuses, and we want to make sure everyone is safe now and when students get to school. So the training that Gary described earlier with the COVID-19 contacts prepares our staff for what to do when somebody may get sick on campus. So on page 31 through 33, we've outlined the recommendations from the health experts on the protocol to follow in the event someone develops symptoms, has been a contact of a positive case, or actually has a confirmed case of COVID-19. I feel really confident in our ability to respond to these situations. And I'm really excited that everyone has put so much energy into learning what the guidelines are around this area.
Thank you. So tonight, we appreciate this opportunity to share with you that, as we said, since the end of middle part of last spring, big question, what's reopening school going to look like? And then the fog, the snow globe, the lack of clarity throughout the summer, the immense effort and dedication that went into the summer and sacrifice by stakeholders from varieties of roles and perspectives. So it's an opportunity to share what it looks like, how plans been revised, in some cases, you know, why it was revised. And as we start tomorrow, let people know that after 68 days of summer, that the summer that provided a lot more questions than answers, oftentimes, that we do have a plan, we're working our plan. Tomorrow, it's opening day, and then just to understand that it's expected to be bumpy coming out of the starting blocks. But if we work together, we hang together, and we support one another, we can find our way and find a rhythm that works and helps students learn and grow. So we appreciate this opportunity. And now, as Jolie Critchfield asked earlier, if there are any questions or comments, anybody in the presentation can help.
Yeah, hey Gary, this is Jeff. Hey, I have one comment, particularly everything is technology based, and for the students in the foothills that don't have accessibility to technology, it's going to be difficult. We all know that. But I would like to see, I've heard from a few parents that it is very difficult to find on the website where to look for the hotspots. So if somehow we could make that a little more accessible to parents so they can find it easily and readily, what they've had to do is go to their principals and have their principals kind of walk them through it. So, you know, that's just one of my comments. And the other question I had is tomorrow's teachers are going to be at school sites. There's going to be parents. There's going to be students. There's going to be staff. Have we already put in place in the classrooms for teachers the PPE that we need, as in face shields, disinfecting sprays, disposable gloves, those types of things? I heard that they were purchased, but are they accessible to teachers, and are they already in the classrooms?
Brian, are you still on, or does anyone want to speak to that question?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can hear you.
Okay. Yeah. So it's all been delivered. I don't know if it's actually been dispersed by each of the schools to the classrooms, but all of it has been delivered as of last week.
Mama, come in here. Where are you going?
Thank you, Brian. So, Brian, I think what I heard you say that it's been delivered to the school site, and we're not quite sure if it's been distributed to each of the classrooms. Is that what I heard?
That is correct, yes.
And I might just add, I did just recently send an email to the principals and inform them that, realizing they may have been getting a lot of deliveries lately, that all of their PPE has been delivered to the sites so that they're aware.
Thank you, Kevin. Any other comments, questions? So go ahead, Angela.
I was just going to chime in with what Mr. Boom was saying, and I can't attest to the fact as to whether or not it has, the PPE or supplies have been delivered to the schools. I believe Mr. Horn answered that part of it, and I have no reason to doubt what he says, but I can't verify that myself. But what I can tell you is that from what I'm hearing from members and on my own account, I can tell you that it has not reached classrooms yet. And so the face coverings that teachers are using, the vast majority of those are their own. The cleaning supplies that we're using in our classrooms to get ready this week are our own. And so if those materials could get out to our classrooms ASAP, that would be extraordinarily helpful, especially to my inbox and my cell phone. It would be extraordinarily helpful so that people can have a little bit of peace of mind as far as that goes, because part of the concern right now is people are wondering if it's not getting to their classrooms because it hasn't arrived at the district. And that's creating a little bit of a panic, because as we all know, not just Marysville Joint Unified, but all across the state and the nation even, some of the supplies we're talking about are back-ordered, unmercifully back-ordered. So it is just creating a little bit of what Gary used to refer to in our staff meetings as heartburn for teachers, that they're wondering, well, is it here? Is it not? Is it backordered still? So if that could get out to teacher classrooms as soon as possible, that would be greatly appreciated and extraordinarily helpful.
So I guess my question is, maybe along those lines, right? You know, Mr. Bowe's comment was that we're going to have all the teachers at school sites tomorrow and all the parents are coming. Like, why are we doing that? I thought we were distance learning. So why are teachers in their classrooms? Why are parents there? I thought if they were going to meet families, they would set up individual meeting times. Am I confused on that?
I don't know if you're asking me or somebody else, but on my end of it, on the teacher side of things, what I can answer, and then whoever else that you're asking can answer as well. But we have families who are coming in to check out Chromebooks. We have families that are coming in across the district to get assistance with technology and Chromebooks, Clever badges, get those picked up. And so we have a lot of that going on. We have teachers who are on campus for any myriad of reasons. A lot of them are on campus because at least to get their classrooms, their virtual classrooms started, they want to make sure that they're coming in and getting those started here. Some of them are on their actual classrooms. Some of those also then are using this time to gather up some of the materials and equipment that they'll need to actually be at home. Some are collaborating, trying to get things together to start the week. We've had a lot going on these last 4 or 5 days, especially. And so we have had teachers on campus, administrators, other personnel, as well as, you know, families. And I wouldn't say that, you know, we've got hundreds of families are coming in, but I mean, there's a steady stream. Are they staying like at my site? They're down towards the vice principal's office. But also even just with the amount of staff that we have that's coming in and out, it would just be really helpful to have the PPE. But also as we start having some of these individual appointments, individual face-to-face, that's going to be critical. I can't tell my members, even those without underlying health conditions or those that live or care for people who have conditions, I cannot tell them in good conscience to be having these one-on-one meetings of any kind without the PPE that we should have.
And that's the foundation of it, that there's not allowed any in-person instruction, and that these meetings or these appointments are for administrative purposes, and their timing, of course, the whole concept of a direct contact or is amount of distance being within 6 feet, even with a mask, for 15 minutes or more. So the idea is public health recognized that as part of getting distance learning going, that these meetings, particularly for the youngest students who have no relationship or connectedness with the school or the teacher yet, that those are, but it's all founded on that, that we are social distancing, wearing facial coverings, hand hygiene, the symptoms check, that's fundamental to it. So this is part of coming out of the starting block is going to stumble for site. It isn't just about health and safety protocols, it's about distance learning, and it's about all these different pieces that are all coming together. They're microcosms of the whole summer. So the true north are those guiding principles of that when we meet, the only way we can meet is when it's safe. And if it's not safe, then we shouldn't be meeting.
So Angela, one of the things I thought I heard you say is teachers are using tomorrow as a preparation day. Tomorrow's game day. I mean, why would we be meeting to try to prepare? Tomorrow should be, we got to start educating kids.
I was talking about getting ready to prepare for tomorrow. People have been coming in today and yesterday to prepare for tomorrow. We had two teacher work days that were for that. Tomorrow, as far as anything for preparation for tomorrow, I mean, you'll have teachers that are on campuses and or in their virtual classrooms at home, starting as early as 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. You'll also have some that are on campuses ready to go for their virtual classrooms at 7 o'clock in the morning. And so for me, it's not a matter of teachers coming in tomorrow to prep. It's a matter of teachers were coming in today and yesterday to prep for tomorrow and thereafter.
I guess I misunderstood what you said. I thought you said tomorrow they're meeting and tomorrow they're coming to get all their stuff ready. So I apologize.
No, that was yesterday and today. And some of that was just making sure there were people who had asked me, you know, exactly what they could take home to help out. And in our MOU and in our talks with the district and with Mr. Carrion in regards to that, we do have it where teachers can take home their technology. It still, of course, remains the property of the district, but they are able to take that home if they are going to be working from home and have their virtual classrooms from their own homes for whatever reason. So we did have, you know, that didn't really get out to people until Thursday. And so we had teachers that were coming in, like I said, yesterday and today to get those things ready. And I know at least a couple of teachers here at Marysville even came in yesterday and today to get like their Google Classroom set up and those types of things online. And then they were taking equipment home to start working from home tomorrow. So a lot of prep work these last couple of days, not to mention the last couple of weeks and couple months and 6 months. I mean, all of the teachers I know are geared up and ready to go for tomorrow. Some of them already with those nervous jitters and stuff, but ready to go nonetheless. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be different, but just like every other year, the teachers are all set and ready for the first day of school.
Thank you, Angela.
Randy, this is Jeff. Hey, what prompted my question was part of the deal that we had just listened to from, I think it was from Rocco, that he had talked about people coming in and setting up appointments and, you know, if they couldn't use their cell phone to set up the appointment, they came inside, use the computer and those type of things. So that's where my question was prompted from. So it just sounded like that there was going to be parents and or students at the schools setting up their virtual classrooms and whatever else they might need, especially if they don't have internet service at home.
Okay. So I do know that even later in the week, my two grandkids have appointments set with their teachers, and they are set times, so I wouldn't think we're going to have a lot of people wandering around, would be my guess, Jenny.
It doesn't take a lot. It only takes one.
Right.
Yeah, no, I didn't anticipate a lot of them, but I've had several calls in the last couple of days since last Friday. I've been fielding calls and people are still, you know, they don't have internet access like a lot of people do. And, you know, maybe they can't afford it. I don't know. But they've been calling me say, hey, we haven't heard anything. What do we do? And, you know, some of them, maybe they're not reading their emails. Maybe they're not listening to the stuff Gary puts out. I don't know, but just some of the calls I'm getting just makes me think that there is going to be some traffic at the schools tomorrow.
Right. Okay, is there any other comments or questions from board members? Mr. Cena or Mr. Carrion, any closing thoughts on that? On our update?
No. That's thank you, everybody.
And again, I would just like to thank all the hard work that went in to update this. And the other thing I would, in closing, I would just like to thank all of our parents that are preparing for tomorrow. And it's definitely going to be a scary situation, but I think if you were able to watch some of the things that our great teachers have already put in place to help make your children feel more comfortable and be able to move forward. You know, it's pretty exciting times for many of our teachers. One thing I would say though is if you have any questions at all, please message your child's teacher. They're the experts on what's going on within their classroom. And they're only there to help you, to kind of support you and your children. So, with that, I would just ask that you please contact your child's teachers. Okay, meeting adjourned.